Blog Talk Radio.
Texas on Wednesday, September the 11th, and as we like to do once a week, we'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We're going to obviously talk a lot today about that debate last night, but we're also going to remember 9/11, 23 years ago today. In fact, at this time of the day, 23 years ago, I think most of us were wondering what in the world was going to happen and where was the next attack going to come. Let me say hello to our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, it's always a great honor to have you.
Oh, well, thank you. That's very kind.
Well, we'll get to the debate in a minute, Bill, but I just wanted to talk a little bit about 9/11 because it is 23 years, and I'm sure you remember a lot about that day. I certainly do. And what remember about this time in 23 years ago is wondering what comes next. That was the fear that I had, that there was maybe a tunnel somewhere or a bridge. Not so much another airplane, because they had all been shut down pretty much. But I kept thinking about, my goodness, what tunnel, what bridge in New York is going to come down? And nothing did. And I give a lot of credit to President Bush and the way he handled that and the anti-terrorism group they put together that kept us at least free of another attack, Bill.
Yes, I think that's often forgotten, that we never had an attack that serious after that. And yes, maybe it is that Al-Qaeda and their crowd didn't plan another attack. That's always possible. But I can't believe that was actually true. They probably wanted another attack, but were blocked by the very, very effective anti-terror units that were set up in the United States and with our overseas allies. And they may realize that they weren't going to get through this time, or if they did get through, it would be very, very expensive to them in terms of our retaliation. So the police get knocked all the time, and so does the FBI. But I think in this case, they did a good job. Also, remember that 9/11 and Pearl Harbor were very different. They were very different kinds of attacks. 9/11 was an attack by terrorists. This was an attack by 9/11 was attacked by terrorists, but Pearl Harbor was attacked by a nation with
right.
a government and a legislature, very different. Also, 9/11 was a one shot. We
mm-hmm.
didn't see an army going across Europe or across the Middle East. It was very limited, and tragically, of course, for the people who were killed, and that was almost 3,000. But there was no great second blow or third blow, as we saw in World War II. Pearl Harbor was followed by attacks on the British in Singapore. It was followed by battles with England. It was followed by Germany's invasion of Russia, which was a terrible mistake that Germany made. I'm talking now, of course, about the Nazi Germany. That was a true world war. This was followed by terror attacks, which were probably no greater than before 9/11, but we realized we were in a war on terror. Now, some people objected to that, thinking, and they objected to the formation of a new government agency called the Department of Homeland Security. They thought words like homeland evoked a kind of Nazi image. I thought that was nonsense, complete nonsense. And they did some good work, not as good as we had hoped because of politics and other things. In the years since, as I mentioned, we haven't had on our shores a 9/11 size attack. There have been attacks in the Middle East, of course. There have been attacks that are basically terror attacks, but are done now with mainstream rockets and missiles. The attempt to attack Israel a few months ago involved about 300 Iranian missiles. So you can do today a great deal with very little in the way of armament. And I think that
right.
is what is frightening people. All it takes is a few people with a determined mind.
Yeah, no, I hear you 100% because, things are, as I said, they're easier now. They don't have to fly airplanes into buildings.
Right.
They probably have easier ways of killing people, as we saw in Israel on October 7th. But I just go back to that day 23 years ago, and it is still very fresh, that day and the events of that day. And I can remember as the evening came down, as we started going into the evening hours, watching President Bush speak to the nation and all of that, and I kept saying to myself, my gosh, is there a surprise now that things are getting dark now, it's dark outside, is something going to happen overnight? And I have to confess, Bill, that I thought I would wake up the morning after 9/11 hearing that maybe something else had happened. It wasn't that I was trying to be negative. It's just that we had never seen anything like 9/11. And I just kept thinking to myself, there's got to be more. But thankfully there wasn't. But I will tell you, Bill, my biggest fear were the tunnels. So many tunnels there in New York. I mean, imagine the damage that would have been done, not just human life, but the economic damage that would have been done not just New York, but other cities, the bridges and all of that. So I guess it worked out okay. We didn't have any other attacks. And one thing I'll say, and then we'll move to the debate, Bill, is that, two things I wanted to quickly say is it seemed like everybody that day did their job, from the police to the firemen, to the FBI, like you said, to the federal government, President Bush, everybody else, the governor there in New York, the mayor of New York, everybody did their job. So I was very proud of the country that when the bell rang, everybody was ready. It seemed like everybody was very good at doing their job. So I was proud of the country for that, looking back at it now. And the other thing I wanted to say is that you mentioned Pearl Harbor. 23 years after Pearl Harbor was 1964, which is the year that I came to the United States. So it just seems like, 23 years can go by pretty fast, I guess. And do you remember, just out of curiosity, what the celebration was in 1964, or let's say 20 years after Pearl Harbor? Was it very big, the celebration, Bill, or the remembrance?
Remembrance, yes, it was. Remember, that attack on Pearl Harbor led to the Pacific War that we fought as part of a world war. The year 1964 was significant only because of the
election,
of the fact that there was a presidential election, and after an assassination. But
that's right.
We had millions and millions of people in this country who fought in World War II, who in 1964 were in their 40s and 50s, relatively young people. So they remembered,
right.
and it was commemorated, and usually with a ceremony at Pearl Harbor, usually aboard the sunken wreck of the USS Arizona. But it was very important. It was not a national holiday, and it isn't today, but it was remembered simply because so many millions of Americans, in effect, were there. They may not have been there physically, but they were there emotionally because they fought in the subsequent war in the Pacific. And of course, it's still, even today, people, they even make movies about it today.
That's right. Well, I mean, if you think about it, you had Eisenhower, Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon, and Ford. All of them fought in World War II. I mean, of course, Eisenhower was general. But, I mean, all the other men served in the war. So, I mean, they were directly impacted by it. I mean, it wasn't something academic to them. They were when the bombs were dropping, as they say. So they were impacted by that. So
And if they don't remember it, then their parents remembered it, and through their parents, they kind of lived the experience again every December 7th. I wish they had a commemoration in Washington of the attack on Pearl Harbor. They have now the World War II Memorial, however, which includes that.
Yes. But then again, you know, not to diminish the importance of Pearl Harbor, but it is 83 years. So you don't have the same emotional connection that people would have to 9/11. I mean, look at the Kennedy assassination. That's really losing its emotional connection, because it just happens that way, I guess, when time...
It's part of history.
Part of history. But the way you remember these events is by having statues and having monuments and keeping the memories going that way. But anyway, it's just fascinating, 23 years ago. Well, last night, Bill, they had a debate. You probably heard about that. And,
I heard about it.
Yeah, well, they had a debate, very interesting debate. And, it's funny. When I first saw the debate, I said to myself, bad night for Trump. Not necessarily a good night for Kamala Harris. I mean, better night than the one that Trump had. But today, Bill, not quite 24 hours later, I think the worst night has to go to ABC. I have seen, Bill, I've seen every one of these debates. Maybe you've seen more, but I've seen every one of these debates going back to 1976 when they went back on TV. I've seen all of them. And I've always felt that the media was responsible in their performance. Now, there was that exception of Candy Crawley. Remember that in 2012?
Oh, yes, very
when
much.
She helped, I guess, Obama with a question, as I recall. But that was isolated.
Yeah.
But last night it was outrageous, these two. I mean,
it was open.
If I was Trump, I would have just walked out and said, hey, why don't you guys have your little party and call me when you want to do a debate? Obviously, that's pretty harsh. But honestly, that's how I feel watching the reruns and the questions and all the fact checking. I mean, no fact checking for Kamala Harris, six times for Donald Trump. I mean,
well, that's yeah.
Couldn't they have done 3 and 3, Bill?
Yes. Well, ABC is known as the most biased network, but you would think that having that reputation, they would have gone out of their way to be neutral, and they didn't. They quite the opposite. They went in the other direction. They harassed Trump throughout the evening, going outside their role as moderator. A moderator is not that night a journalist. A moderator is a moderator. It's a different function. And as you said, they kept on harassing Donald Trump. They kept on fact-checking him. They never once fact-checked Kamala Harris. They never went out of their way to insult her. If they did ask a question of her that could be perceived as negative, it was one they knew she was going to answer anyway, such as, could you explain the switches in your positions? Of course that question was going to be asked, so she was ready for that. But as you said, the bias was stunning, absolutely stunning, and yet you don't hear much of it from the other networks. You don't hear much of it from the press or from ABC. They probably believe that nobody noticed. But I think the country is way ahead of them and understands what the press really is. And I think it was noticed, and I think it diminished any victory that Harris might have.
I agree. And again, I'll say it again. I thought President Trump missed some opportunities last night to hit it out of the park. He had several opportunities, I think, where he could have done a heck of a lot better. I think he did what we were hoping he wouldn't do, which is to go off on these distractions, you know, that he often goes, he often does, and I hate it, but he does it. But at the same time, I mean, the bias of the media was so incredible. The fact that Kamala Harris was allowed to literally lie about certain things. I mean, there was no mass. I mean, there Trump didn't send a mob into the Capitol on January 6th. He didn't say when he used bloodbath, he wasn't talking about killing people. I mean, all these kinds of things that would have been very easy targets for people who were ready, they were very eager to fact check Trump, and yet, Bill, they let those incidents pass by, and I watched this thing, and I said to myself, I cannot be the only person in the country who notices this. And as it turns out, I mean, a lot of people did, Bill, including, if I may just quickly say this, including the media analyst at Fox News, whose name I don't remember right now.
Kurtz.
Yes. He was all over them today. He was saying that was,
yes.
He gave him a D-minus or something. And I'm pretty sure that there must be a lot of serious journalists out there, Bill, maybe the kind of journalist you remember before, who watched that and said, that's not journalism, that's bad. Anyway,
yes.
That's what I think, Bill.
What is interesting is that I don't, at least to the extent of my knowledge, I don't think that ABC itself has made any comment on all the comments that are out there. If I were ABC, I would perhaps have another program giving people a chance to comment on the role of their so-called journalists, but at least say something. I mean, at least maybe appoint a permanent committee to examine these things. You know, Eisenhower once said, if you've got an intractable problem, enlarge the problem. They have a problem now. I don't think that anybody really believes that ABC is capable of doing a neutral broadcast, and I don't think they'll be invited to do so.
Well, I certainly wouldn't recommend for them to be considered for the next round of presidential debates. You know, I had a problem, Bill, with these debates, the way they were done. They were done very quickly, and they were done by network, which I don't like. Now, CNN turned out okay. That wasn't really bad. But I think the way they should be done is you have people from different networks who ask questions. And I think that makes a better debate, I think. But those
mm-hmm.
two last night from ABC, they didn't look to me like they understood even the subjects they were asking. I was not very impressed with them, really. I thought they were pretty bad, Bill.
I thought they were immature. You know, I mean, Davis started lecturing Trump on, you know, nowhere in the United States is it legal for a woman to kill a child after birth. I'm not so sure that's true. And they should have explored that a little bit more. But the overall effect was that you felt that Donald Trump was facing three people.
Right.
You know, Kamala Harris and her two friends from the network. And there are other stories that have come out that one of the major wives of a major ABC executive is a very close friend of Kamala Harris. And there was absolutely no attempt in the broadcast itself for the ABC people to get out of this. I mean, they had so many opportunities to ask tough questions of Kamala Harris and to pursue a subject for beyond a minute, and they didn't choose those opportunities. Now, it has been mentioned also that Trump himself did not pursue
right.
the opportunities given to him by Kamala Harris's babbling and by her dishonest statements. So you got to give a little, not credit, but discredit to Trump. I don't think he was at his best. I think he was very overconfident, believing that you could just come to a debate and because of your knowledge just get through it. The business that Harris chose, or the device that Harris chose, was that she basically structured the debate for ABC. I mean, you have the feeling that if she wasn't involved directly, and certainly some of her people were making suggestions, because the whole debate played right into her hands.
Right. No, I agree. Now, the one thing that I would say, when CNN had their debate back in June, the Biden-Trump debate, I heard from Bill O'Reilly that the word came down at CNN saying, you guys cannot be anti-Trump. You got to play it fair.
Yeah, right.
They played it down the middle. They didn't do all the fact-checking like they were doing last night. But last night, I think the people at ABC must think that Americans are stupid and that we're not going to pick up on it.
And
being,
sure
you know, you're I mean, you're sitting there watching the most obnoxious kind of bias, and if I picked it up, I'm sure millions of people picked it up, Bill.
Oh, yes. They do feel that people are stupid. You know, these are the people they refer to as the crossover people. The flyover people. Most of America is not something they know, and they don't want to know most of America. The people they have lunch with are people in politics, usually on one of the two coasts. They're all insiders. They speak the same political language, but they don't know their country. And I think they do believe Americans are stupid, which is not true. If you have a serious debate on television or live, people with very little educations will pick up things one right after the other. But that idea of that the mainstream American is stupid is a fatal idea for some political party.
Absolutely. And I just felt, you know, that when I watched the debate, when it was being carried live, I didn't watch it live. I watched the rerun. But the first time I watched, I couldn't watch it live because I was teaching last night, but when I got home, I did see the whole thing, the rerun. I went to bed kind of late, but I wanted to see it, you know? And my first reaction was, you know, that was not a good night for Trump. He missed a lot of great opportunities. I didn't think it was a great night for Kamala Harris because he still never explains anything. But I thought, man, Trump missed a lot of fat pitches right down the middle of the plate. And I was disappointed, really. I was disappointed with Trump. But then I watched the second time, and I really saw the bias. And then I began to see all these polls that are coming out actually saying that Trump won, which is crazy. I don't know how they do those polls anyway. I don't know how you call people at midnight asking them what they think of a debate, Bill. I've never understood these polls that come out at midnight. I mean, what people answer the phone at midnight, Bill?
People who didn't instruct the phone company to block the business callers. You're absolutely correct. I mean, I think that a lot of these polls are probably very shabby, probably involve very few actual voters. They probably included mostly just, you know, voters as opposed to likely voters. There's quite a difference between those two. A poll of just voters, people who were registered, will always be more on the side of the Democratic Party than likely voters who tend to turn more Republican. And that's important because a lot of people are warning in the polling industry that the polls that are being taken now are probably tilted somewhat toward Kamala Harris because the Democratic-leaning pollsters usually overpolled Democrats, but that the actual final count will probably even it out, and that you'll probably have more Republican votes. I think – I don't know why it is that Republicans usually wind up being undercounted in polls, but they are, and that is why they sometimes will run a secondary article pointing out the probability that not as many Democrats as Republicans were not as many Republicans as Democrats were counted, and other things, and the fact that the polling generally tends to the left. I think that what we saw last night was not so much a poll or a debate, but a show. I think it was a show. It was more show business than it was politics, and still not interesting. But I think criticisms. Go ahead.
I was going to say that we're going to take a quick break, but I agree 100% with you. I think that gave the word debate a bad name last night.
It did.
I mean, it didn't do anybody any favor. Let's take a little break, Bill, and we come back. I want to get into a little bit more of you know what went on last night and where President Trump goes from here, because I guess Fox News is offering a debate in October,
from what
I understand. And let's see if they pick up the idea. So we're going to take a little break and be back with our friend Bill right after this. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, looking back at that, what they called a debate last night that sound, Bill, it felt like a party for Kamala. Did you have that feeling that maybe ABC decided to throw a party for Kamala and they invited Donald Trump just to see? I don't know. That's kind of how it felt, that it was Kamala's night.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And of course, if you add to that the commentary on the non-ABC networks, some of that was just as tilted. I mean, they were basically cheering on Kamala Harris. And also, I think that the basic setup of the debate was very poor. I think to really pick out and analyze and study the reaction to a debate, you really have to have it before a live audience. I want to hear those boos, and I want to hear the applause, and I want to hear the way the candidates react, because let's see how they react to an audience where they don't know who that audience is going to be. I think that was the first mistake. The second mistake is that the whole debate had a kind of loose feel to it, that it really was not a serious event, that it was, as I just said, more of a show than anything else. If the moderators had done their job, which they didn't, and if others had done their jobs, you could have had an interesting discussion between the two, between Harris and President Trump, that actually meant something. But the way this was set up, with the moderators making up, or at least using questions tilted to one side, it ruined the whole effect of a debate. A debate is usually something held in public. The Lincoln-Douglas debates were held outside. And I think that it is not only so much more exciting, but it is so much more meaningful. I think that when political people know that part of the public is there, that you're speaking not only to a bunch of technicians in the studio, but to the whole nation, there is usually a different and probably a better result.
Yes, and I think going back today, and actually, I guess the benefit of YouTube or whatever, going back and actually listening to the moderators, for example, Kamala Harris saying that there's not a single American soldier in combat or in harm's way or something like that, that she said, well, you better explain that to the guys in Iraq who just got bombed a week ago or whatever it was.
That's right.
And there were seven injured. That was a perfect opportunity for fact checking. But Bill, something that struck me about Kamala Harris last night, and she doesn't explain anything. I mean, if you just listen to what she's saying, she's engaging in all these. Honestly, it reminds me of Obama, but Obama was better at it, I guess, if I could say it that way. And Obama was running at a different time, 2008. But it just reminds me of that, where she starts talking about, well, you know, I want to build this economy for the middle class. And, I'm going to be the president of the middle class and the prosperity economy or whatever she called it. And if I was the moderator, I would have said, okay, Madam Vice President, just exactly what have you done for the middle class here in the last couple of years?
Right.
You want to be the president of the middle class? I mean, there's a lot of middle class people complaining and voting for Trump because they're unhappy with you.
That's exactly right. And she could have done that. They all could have done far better than they actually did. I mean, people talk about Trump being weak. Harris put on a better show, but the point has been made that in terms of content, it was very, very small. She never really answered most of the questions. She did not have much to talk about in her own defense. And the moderators, as we pointed out, the moderators seemed not to want a real debate. They seemed to want to themselves decide who was going to win and who was going to lose. And I think the whole thing was basically very dull.
Well, yeah. I mean, I didn't learn anything from it. I mean, I was hoping to learn something about what Kamala Harris – I mean, I kind of know what Trump wants to do. But I would have loved to have learned more about Kamala Harris, and she didn't really say anything. I mean, I'm still trying to figure out what the prosperity economy is, or whatever she called it.
Exactly. And if she had come in and said, look, Here's where the problem lies. People don't have enough money to spend, especially with these very high prices. And she, by the way, never really discussed inflation. I mean, she just said, well, it's less now than it was. I mean, that's like one of the officers of the Titanic saying, Captain Smith, the Titanic is still sinking, but at a much lower rate than before. So go out and have some fun. You know, that's basically what she was saying. Had they asked, had it been a more professional debate, and I think we've had some good professional debates, everybody would have benefited. Right now, I think that yes, it is true that people are saying that she did a better job of presenting, but you don't hear much praise for her emphasis or not non-emphasis on issues. I think that is where the big hole lies. And, you know, once the debate has been held, within a few weeks, people have forgotten most of it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's true. I mean, there's only one bill. I mean, there's only two debates that I really remember of the ones that I've watched. And Reagan in 1980, that last, there you go again, you know, that.
Oh, yes.
That last
that was
debate that they had. A great debate. And then, of course, Reagan in 84, you know, I'm not going to make an issue out of my opponent's youth. And there were some others, I mean, that were okay. I thought Bush and Gore had some interesting ones. Clinton and the first Bush. The night that this fellow who was the vice president for Ross Perot showed up. Who am I? That remember that?
Yes.
I thought that was kind of funny. But for the most part, I mean, as I said before, I always felt that the moderators or the news people or the people asking questions went out of their way to be fair. And because they didn't want to appear to the American people that they were one side or the other. I mean, I think they had a sense of self-respect and respect for their profession, if I could put it that way. And they didn't want to be come across as people who were carrying water for one side or the other. But that ended last night, Bill. That last night was, I'm not sure there's going to be another debate ever, Bill, like in that kind of a format then.
Not in that kind of a format. Yes. Well, you know, on the old Meet the Press, Lawrence Spivak, who was the moderator of the panel, would caution the audience and say, do not assume that a question reflects the way the questioner really feels. It may be simply his way of getting a story for you. And that was correct. They might have been very, very tough on a guest on one issue, but not on another. And it was their way of getting that guest to respond. Now, last night, the only person they were tough on was Donald Trump. And what is amazing also is they didn't even deny it. I mean, I haven't heard any denials coming out of ABC. Was so totally directed toward improving the position of Kamala Harris. And some say, well, you know, it may increase her vote. That is true. It also may increase her vote now that Taylor Swift has endorsed her. Unbelievable if that would have an effect on an election, but it may. It may very well. But we don't really understand the full mental process of the voter. I mean, we understand some of it. A lot of it has to do with simply they may like somebody and yet not like somebody else, not realizing that this may not be their real personalities. It may be the put-on personality required of a candidate. So,
right.
But I think that the greatest check on any debate is an audience that is live, that has been selected to be neutral, and that is willing to boo a little if a bad question comes up or a bad answer.
Right. And I wanted to say one thing and then go, but let me quickly – remember, you talk about the audience. Remember Gingrich in 2012 when he was asked that question about his wife or something? And he said, I don't want to, but I'll answer the question. And the crowd got up and applauded him and really showed their anger with the CNN question. That's,
yes.
You know, I think that could have happened last night if there had been an audience there. There
Absolutely.
May have been...
That's what brings it alive.
I agree. But here's something else, Bill. I made me a note here of things that did not come up, or at least I didn't hear. A place called China.
Yes.
A place called Iran. Israeli hostages. I didn't hear anything about that, and I think those are pretty important issues. I mean, how does somebody organizing a presidential debate, Bill, not mention these things? That is outrageous.
Well, yes, they were mentioned briefly, but not developed as in accordance with their importance. Well, you know, foreign policy takes a backseat in most presidential elections. I think, though, that in recent years, people have realized they have to take an interest in foreign policy because, as an editor friend of mine once said, what happens in Southeast Asia can result in the drafting of a boy in Detroit, and people should be aware of that. But the questions about foreign policy last night were very, very vague and general. You know, will you keep a powerful army? Yes, I'll keep a powerful army, and stuff like that, stuff that really meant nothing. How do you end? They talk about ending the war. Well, they should have each been asked, how would you end the war? What exactly would you do that nobody has done since? And there wasn't that there. They did not take those questions seriously, which is very, very regrettable.
It is, because, as you indicated, one of these conflicts could very well mean that a young man who was watching that debate last night, or the son of a couple watching that debate, could be going to fight a war somewhere. You know, another question that did not come up, Bill, which I was very disappointed, because I think this is a critical question, and that is the shortage that we have right now in recruiting for the U.S. Army.
Oh, yes.
And that, to me, that's a critical question that the next president is going to have to address. Either we go back to the draft, or we better come up with a way of recruiting more people, Bill.
Well, yes, and recruiting more people is not going to occur with a military force that is now controlled by civilians who are woke civilians and who think that's the most important thing you do is diversity. Diversity is now being taught as an academic subject at West Point. It's ridiculous, because when people want to join the military or think they may want to, they want to be proud. They want to feel that they're getting into a great institution. And when all they hear is, well, you know, we have equity here and people must join for equity reasons, it turns it into more of a lecture than a military force.
Exactly. No, exactly. It turns off a lot of young people who say, that's not the army that my dad went to.
That's
or
right.
My grandfather went to. I mean, there's a lot of military families here in Texas, Bill, generations, where you go to their homes and you see pictures on the wall of the father, the grandfather, the uncle, and there's a great tradition, military tradition. Those people are not signing up. And I don't think it's because they hate the country all of a sudden. I just feel that maybe they don't feel like it's their dad's army anymore, Bill.
That's right. They don't feel part of an honorable tradition. They feel it's just basically an organization, because they've heard so much about this woke stuff and about the fact that winning a war doesn't seem to be very high on the agenda. The military has never been perfect, but at least there was an attempt at morale based on the idea that this was a fighting force. Now, I don't even know what they do to build morale, but it certainly doesn't look like a very fearsome army or Navy or the other services. I think that whole idea of diversity and DEI and all the other letters that come up has no place in the military. The military should be about keeping the peace and winning a war, and that's it. And this, all the social studies stuff that they're introducing cadets to and trainees to, I think does far more harm than good.
Right. One of the last things I wanted to mention, Bill, people are talking about the so-called gender gap between these two candidates. And it's a real gender gap. The men are voting for Trump in huge numbers, and the women are voting for Kamala Harris in big numbers. They're not as big as the men for Trump.
Right.
And maybe that's the reason that the Democrat Party has become so focused on women, on abortion, for example. They think that somehow that's how they're going to get more women to vote, because of abortion. And yeah. I don't know. I don't have an answer, but I don't think it's a healthy thing for the country to have all the men voting one way and all the women voting the other way, Bill.
I fully agree. I fully agree. And I think that is very much a function of this concept called identity politics, where people are taught to identify not with the country, but with their group. And that's no way to run a country. It's no way to run a military service. It's very, very different from the old Army and Navy tradition of going back into history, teaching new recruits about the history of the service, about things they should be proud of. I don't even know if that kind of thing goes on today, and it's a shame if it doesn't.
Right, exactly. You're right about that. Well, Bill, I think what I can tell you, what I can say about last night's debate is that it didn't turn out that bad for Trump, but he got a lot of help from ABC.
Oh yes,
that
certainly
had ABC did. Had ABC maybe been more balanced, or had they done the same thing to Kamala Harris, maybe it would have been a better debate. I certainly would have loved to see that. But in retrospect, maybe he didn't do himself as much harm as I initially thought, Bill.
Well, I think that's probably true. We'll have another analysis of this debate in a few days. But the thing that we really want to see is the first actual public opinion polls, not about the debate, but how do you intend to vote? I'm not interested in their opinion of the debate. And we will begin to see whether the debate actually moved any numbers. I'm not sure it will.
Right. The one thing, this is somewhat of a personal reaction to Donald Trump. I have never seen a man, he's 78 years old, I believe. I've never seen a man who is 78 go as fast as this man is going. I mean, goes from here to there. Does a rally here, does a rally here. And I'm wondering sometimes, you know, he's not pushing himself too much, because I'm not saying that he's got cognitive issues. I'm not saying that. But I'm just simply saying I've never seen a 78-year-old man keep the kind of pace that this man is keeping. I mean, it's remarkable, but I wonder sometimes if he's maybe pushing his luck a little bit with his health, Bill.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, I'm not a physician, obviously, and we have not examined him, but I think that the strain must be enormous, just enormous. I remember the little time I spent in politics as a young man, the U.S. senator I worked for said, running for president is the hardest job in the world. It's just one grueling day after another. And yes, I worry about his health. I worry about the health of all of them.
Right. And again, he looks fine. I mean, he looks great, really, if you think about it. But it just seems to me that we've never had that before. We've never had a man of that age pushing himself like he is. And again, I sometimes I wish he would take a break and just, you know, sleep late for a change.
And just good idea.
Yeah, by the way, I just heard the best definition of last night's debate. This is from Leslie Eastman of Legal Insurrection. Great. She said, the ABC debate was like a woke Star Wars movie. The critics loved it,
right. And
the public hated it.
Right. I think that's a good way of putting it.
I agree. I'm going to have to send Leslie a note saying, you hit it out of the park, Leslie, with that one. But that is so true, you know. The critics love certain movies, and the public says, no, we don't like
it. That's right.
And they're the ones who
the
buy
time.
Tickets. Well,
absolutely.
Bill, as always, thank you so much for your time. It's always great to chat with you, and I hope you have a great evening. And are there more 9/11 celebrations, or is it pretty much over?
I think it's pretty much over, by sundown.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just this day brings back so many memories. That is just absolutely, absolutely amazing. Have a great evening, Bill, and thank you so much for being a part of it.
Oh, thank you. I consider myself honored, and I look forward to our next discussion.
Okay, we'll get together the next time. Maybe we'll have something to talk about that is not politics, but then that wouldn't be fun.
Right.
All right, Bill, thank you so much. Thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
All right, our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, talking about this debate. Interesting debate, to say the least. Thank you for listening, everybody.